Hello, and welcome to The Staffing Show, the only podcast that delivers tools, tips, and tactics from the staffing and recruiting industry's top executives and thought leaders.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Staffing Referrals. At Staffing Referrals, we understand the challenges your agency faces every day. From finding high-quality candidates and clients to automating your recruitment process, our platform is designed to help you grow your agency faster. Imagine a world where your agency can automatically build your talent community, improve your recruiter's productivity, and automate manual processes, all the while improving the candidate experience. But don't just take our word for it. Here's what a few satisfied customers have to say. Our referral program boomed after partnering with Staffing Referrals. The technology allows us the tracking, communication, and reporting our traditional referral program desperately needed to unify and expand. Can't imagine our business without it. Are you ready to transform your staffing agency? Let's reduce your dependency on job boards. Deliver the experience your candidates expect from a modern business and turn your talent pool into a competitive advantage. Visit staffingreferrals.com and get ready to grow.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for another episode of The Staffing Show. Today, I am super excited to be joined by Tana Green, the co-founder and CEO of My Work Choice. Tana, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Oh my gosh, I couldn't be more happier. I've listened to your show for years, and I'm so excited to be part of your whole team.
Awesome. Well, I've already enjoyed the conversation we've had just warming up to it, so I can't wait to jump right in here. I think our audience is going to be especially interested and excited about not only your story, but also My Work Choice's story and kind of what you've done with your agency and with your brand. But to start things off a little bit differently than we do here a lot of times with The Staffing Show, I want to jump right into the meat of it and just talk about what's wrong in the world today and what are you doing about it?
Oh, I love that. That's an open-ended for me to go quite a while. I'll try not to go too long. I think for us, it's 36 years. Coming up May 9th, it'll be 36 years since I started this business. And what we saw about the shift about 8-9 years ago in light industrial, because that's pretty much where I'm going to focus today. I've done many other lines, but this is really about the commercial staffing. And what we saw was the turnover was ridiculous. I mean, it was over 400% 7-8 years ago. And you think about that and you think, okay, I've got a client that needs 1,000 people. I'm hiring 4,000 a year to keep them whole.
And probably buying just resume after resume after resume off the job boards.
Yeah. I mean, with light industrial, they're just piling through the doors, right? Yeah. So you're just like almost a union hall where they line up outside and fill out applications. And I think the biggest aha moment came to us when we had the electronic time clock, right? When technology doesn't work, it's always terrible, right? But the time clock broke. We had to do all of the time by hand. We didn't have 1,000 people there. We had 1,400 people there. Now, you would think you would have figured that out based on the number of checks you're cutting. But for some reason, when you need 1,000 people on a floor, you're just meeting the needs of each supervisor. So this one needs 50, this one needs 25, this one needs 75. And you're shuffling people through, not even realizing that you're using that many people. And we sat down and said, how many hours are these people averaging? Well, they were only averaging 32 hours a week. And yet we're firing them at a rate of 400% a year because of what? Absenteeism. So when we really sat back to it, we said, well, if you took absenteeism off the table, what would happen? And of course, we were met by the customer by saying, you have to have rules. You can't take absenteeism off the table. And it was like, but if you let them truly work when they can, what would happen? So we tested it. And we literally tested it with a site that had 400 temporaries a day need. And we hired 600 and we trained them all ready to go. And then we just let it happen within an app. We had a scheduler app that we used off the shelf. This was 6 years ago. And we were hitting 95, 100% show raise. The difference is in our traditional world, you're given an order for 100 and you hit that 100 day one, you check the mark, right? I've done my job. But what happens day two, day three, yep. day four? What is that show rate then? And well, it ratchets down from 60 to 40 to 30 to 20 until they're refilling the order again. But in the meantime, productions come to a halt because you don't have enough headcount. So by giving them the choice to work what shifts they wanted and sign up for, we were literally able to hit every single shift. And we went, we're on to something here. It doesn't mean that you just have a free-for-all or you're using some stranger off the street. Now, I know there are apps out there that are marketplaces that do that. But for us, it was truly, I know that the manufacturing world and supply chain world is not going to accept a stranger off the street. They have to be background checked. They have to be trained. So it was a matter of how many people do I need? And you and I talked a little bit about AI, but AI can figure out what is my turnover amongst the flex workers to where I know when I have to hire to keep that pool fresh. So turnover has gone from 400 today. We did a study recently that's on our website, by the way. It's a case study between a traditional temporary contingent on light industrial versus a flex contingent on light industrial. It's 488% turnover there. With us, we were having over 50% of our people had been there year two. We had 19% year three. We're having consistency of people. And you know why? Because they can work when they need to work. It doesn't mean that the biggest myth about this, which is crazy, is, oh, well, I'm only getting a part-time worker. No, actually, our flex workers work more hours than the permanent full-time workers.
That's incredible.
Our full-time flex workers are working 37 hours versus 32 hours in the full-time workforce. But we also have a part-time workforce that fills in when those gaps occur. So it's kind of like we used to say, boy, I wish I had a bench of workers that just sat ready every day that you could just plug them in.
Yep.
And then when somebody's going to be out, you plug that person in. Well, basically, that's how the technology works. So we built our own proprietary technology 6 years ago. We began this. And the biggest aha to us is if you allow somebody to drop a shift, what is the likelihood that somebody in that pool will pick it up? Well, I can tell you it's 99.5%.
That's insane.
As long as they drop it within 12 hours.
So you've created the bench.
So what we did was created automated backfill technology, and that's trademarked, by the way. So when somebody's not going to be there, they hit the button that they're not going to be there, and then somebody else who's already pre-trained fills in.
That's amazing.
We also broke down the shifts from a 12-hour shift to a 6-hour shift, or a 10-hour shift to a 5-hour shift. So now you can get these sideline workers that can't work those long shifts to come in and work the 4-hour shift or the 8-hour shift. They can't do those. So it's amazing how when you relook at your hourly workforce and how we expect them to work, because guess what? They're working the way they want to work anyway. We expect them to put in 40 plus overtime, but they're not. Nobody's doing that. And they're getting fired because of it. They're a great employee. But they've had 3 strikes. They've had 3 absences. So guess what? I'm terminating them. So we're living in a world that's very different in the way the workers work and the way we expect them to work. So this is that middle of the road that comes into play that gives the flexibility. Most people want the 40 hours a week or they want their consistent 30 hours a week, but they want to be able to drop when they need to without penalty. And that's what this has done for it.
So it's kind of incredible. So you looked at the turnover rate over 400%, basically like, how do we solve this? And I feel like mostly what I hear is higher quality, different source, better benefits. I mean, the benefits kind of fall in here, but you were like, what do they ultimately want? It's flexibility.
Flexibility.
It's flexibility. And so you went out and built an app and then have figured out how to kind of scale that. And also, I think this is post-COVID, we have more people looking at the world of flexibility, but I think that 6 years ago, this was you were early to the market and have built a platform that does that in a meaningful way. Do you know, just in terms of the average hours worked, how that varies? Did I know? Yeah. Is that something you can tell you?
We're running at 32 average hours worked.
Okay.
And that's for like people that want full time.
Yep.
Then the ones that want part time are working about 16 to 18 hours a week.
That's amazing. And from an operational standpoint, I imagine the quality is much higher because you're getting the same people back, and then you're not having your team, you're probably doing a lot more with less.
Yes, a lot more. And in fact, we don't have brick and mortar offices anymore either. So this has become 100% virtual in the recruiting process as well.
And how long ago did you shift from the brick and mortar, and what have some of the challenges been along that path?
Well, we switched over 6 years ago. We made the decision. It took us about a year and a half to completely exit all the branches that we had and to go completely virtual. And it is amazing. I mean, we out recruit. We can put a traditional temp to hire job on an ad, and we can put a flex job on an ad, and we're going to recruit at 106% higher for that flex job than we are for the full time. It's amazing.
That's incredible.
I don't have a problem recruiting. I have zero problem recruiting. If you have the word flexibility and they truly get that it's a flex job, that's why our referrals coming from you guys, thank goodness, is so high. Our conversion is so high because it's flexibility and people are telling other people.
So, I mean, one of the things that we're talking about all of this, and just to give some people context on when we're talking about what you've built, the growth rate, I think, is pretty astounding too, in the size of your organization. We talked about that a little ahead of time, but maybe you could shed some light on where you guys are at in terms of W-2s and where the growth rate you're experiencing today.
Yeah, we're over 10,000 W-2s last year. And the key to that is typically in a traditional staffing, 10,000 W-2s would mean maybe 25% of those actually worked. Mm-hmm. But because ours don't turn over, ours is more like 70%.
That's
so you can't compare it to what a traditional staffing model is because our turnover is so much lower.
Yeah, that is incredible. And that does make sense that you're just getting more out of less. And then also sounds like you've solved some of the recruiting problems as well. Can you tell us a little bit more about the experience building an app and kind of going down that path? Because I've been in software development for quite a while and I've had lots of lessons learned. And I think that might be interesting for people to hear about.
Well, I remember when we first started this, it was like, expect to spend 2 to 10 times more than you expect. Well, I can tell you that that's a fact.
It's a fact.
And delivery on time is never on time.
Not a possibility.
You're never finished. It's a constant grind because you're learning. First of all, we're a pioneer in what we're doing. And we're building something to go with that. And every time we learn something, we have to go rebuild what we built. So, yeah. So I would say that I am looking forward to when AI can actually code, because I think that, and it's coming. We've been watching that very closely, because right now it's you either build an entire house, in-house team, which we went that way to begin with, and then we realized outsourcing gives you more talent. So we have our product development inside, but we use outside talent. So we've learned a lot along the way. We spent a lot of money we didn't have to spend. But we've gotten a product now that we feel is 90% there.
That's amazing. It is an expensive learning experience to build software. And it is also, I think it was like 3 years ago, my accountant was like, it's like, oh, well, you're almost done with building it, right? Like, you're going to be done building it. Like, no, we're just getting started. Like, that cost is not going to be decreasing anytime soon.
Right. I think I've asked that same question from a CEO standpoint, looking at the budget many a time. Yes.
That's incredible that you've gotten to where you are. And what else are you guys doing within the app? What are some other exciting things that you have going on?
I think what came out of that is, so we're using it ourselves for our W-2 employees, right? And then a client comes to us and says, we want to put our permanent people on it. We went, what? Why do you want to put your people on ours? And they said, well, because our people drop shifts all the time, but they don't even tell us. They just don't show up. And at least if they have some kind of gamification to where they can push a button and say, hey, I'm not going to be there because my daughter's sick or my mother needs to be taken to the doctor or whatever their reason is, we want them to be able to hit that button. And so we created the SaaS side of this for them to put their, now it's a holistic, it's their people, our people, and all in the mix. So let's say their person's got to take a Wednesday off, but yet they don't want to lose that 8 hours. Now they have a way to pick up a shift that might occur on Saturday that they would have never known about unless somebody was dialing phone calls from the internal of the company. They do not have these sophisticated tools. I was amazed at these huge companies, Fortune 500, that, you know, use a pegboard to know if somebody could be out, which is, believe me, that's a true story. So I look at that and I go, okay, well, wow, we are literally helping them become 100% filled on every shift every day, which in essence cuts down all overtime because you can fill every shift. The deal is having the bench of workers sitting there and have a way for everybody to know when something needs to occur.
I think that's pretty incredible. So you're solving absenteeism, not only for your W-2s, but also the companies you're working with. Your clients are actually using your app to solve the same problem with their workforce.
Yeah, because you want to know what really blew my mind, David? Is, do you know what the average absenteeism is per day in manufacturing?
No, I don't.
It's 30%.
Oh my God.
And that blew our minds because we're talking to clients and they're going, well, we have 30% a day. And we're going, what? So we started investigating that end of it and we were shocked. So here's a plant that needs 1,000 workers. They're short 300 every day. So how have they been dealing with that? They have 8 different staffing companies, a vendor management system. It's all chaos and people are throwing orders out there to try to get bodies in the door. And then I'm going to fire you because you've had 3 absences. I mean, that's chaos to me.
That is chaos. And so what percent are a lot of your customers using this for this purpose?
We have replaced vendor management systems and all other staffing companies in a plant completely.
That's crazy. It's crazy when you build a software for one purpose, thinking you're scratching your own itch and like for your own selfish reasons. And then all of a sudden they're like, well, we want that too.
Right, exactly. I mean, they'll say to us, you know, you'll need to go through our vendor management. And we go, well, we don't play well with vendor management, so it doesn't work that way. And so they've exited vendor management contracts and contracts with other staffing because it just, if you've got a traditional staffing model coming in one door and the flex coming in the other, guess what? They all come over and want to work for us. So you're going to lose it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like everybody today, flexibility is one of the number one things. And when you have a job that you don't have that option, it's like, well, what are you going to do? We all have life outside of work. So it exists.
Yes. And truly, that is one of my driving factors of this is the purpose behind this is to empower the working world. I know that sounds like a huge job, but these are the workers of the world and they've never had flexibility. So I feel like empowering them with choice is what's working, but it's working to give the holistic 100% fill to the client.
Yeah.
And no overtime. I mean, now I can truly budget what I need.
And I'm just curious, how does that shift the workforce that you put to work in terms of the quality, who's there?
We've done a little studying on that. We tend to get a higher educated person.
Yep.
We're 55% female now, which is unheard of in the manufacturing world because they can pick their shifts. So if you think about it, I hear these manufacturing companies say, we have got to figure out how to get more women in here. But I expect them to work 40 hours plus overtime every week. Well, I'm sorry. Something's wrong with this picture because that doesn't work.
Yeah.
If you go back to Ford created the 8-hour workday so that he could fill his manufacturing with 7 days a week, right? But it was only men in the workforce. They had wives at home that took care of all the other stuff. Life is not like that now. You have shared duties between male and female. I'm sure you can attest to that. You don't get to just sit back when you come home and read your newspaper.
The world is different.
The world is different. So yeah. People need flexibility, but they don't need to be fired for it.
Yeah. I wonder, do you know how that compares to, I'm imagining 55% has to be in multiples over the traditional workforce. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It is. And again, we get a higher, I feel like the quality is so much higher because you're getting a higher caliber person that is committing to that. And we've seen that across the board.
Well, I also think it's the, in general, I mean, this might be anecdotal in my own experience, but the people who expect more flexibility are the people who expect higher, you know, they want more from what they're doing. And it makes sense that it would also align with a higher quality of worker as well.
Yeah. And think about your retiree. It's like, it's raining out. I can't play golf today. Well, I need to earn some money because I want to go see my grandkids. They're phenomenal at this as well. It's not just the Gen Zs and the XYZs and the, all that. It's everybody, everybody who needs to work. And if they want to go to work for the client, they can go to work for the client. If they have a permanent job opening, we open it completely, no fees. They can go right to work for that client, but they don't choose to because they need the flexibility.
I mean, it's true, like gig economy meets manufacturing. You know, people can pick up a job when they want and work. If they need to call out, they don't have to feel bad about it.
Yeah. The problem with the gig worker is, one, they're 1099, which we all know with the new rules out now, you can't
do that.
Use it. No. Number two is, I, as a manufacturer, can't just take some stranger off the street. Just because you recruited 3,000 people in my town doesn't mean I can throw a job out and just take the stranger. I need to know that they've been trained. So that's where we're a little different.
And like, are you doing, I imagine, self-onboarding? Do you have like the training materials included in there as well? Is that all part of the vetting spree?
Yes, as much as we can do prior to them walking through the door, we do. And then the client takes it from there when they get to the floor.
That's incredible. And what are some of the, I guess, secrets to your success over the years? So I feel like you've got a ton of stories that we've talked about a little bit, but with driving this to where it's at, because I know a lot of staffing agencies say they're going to go build software and doesn't always end up in this with where we're at right now. So what are some of the things that you, keys to getting to where you've been?
For myself personally, I'm a futurist and I can see the things. Very fortunate to have a very innovative team surrounding me that, because I cannot take credit for this alone. Trust me, it has taken an entire village to make this happen. And just having that innovative team, my president's got as many years in the industry as I have. He's taking companies public. He's seen it all. And yet he continues to work by being with the client and say, wow, this is really going to make it happen. I think I'm a huge risk taker. When I see something that's going to really value and benefit somebody, I'm going to drive it till it drives me. I mean, I'm not going to quit. One of our core values is never settle. And that's kind of where I drive, even at my age now, who's now officially on Medicare. I am driving change every day, but that's just kind of my makeup. And when you see something so broken as the staffing industry, you go, there's got to be a way to improve this. And yes, it's taken a lot of blood, sweat, and tears and a lot of money.
Well, and with that, I mean, I think that my work choice story is just incredible. And I also know that we had a brief conversation about your personal story. Would you mind just digging in and sharing that with the audience a little bit about your personal journey? Because I think it's pretty incredible as well.
Sure. It's an open book. Well, for me, I grew up in Virginia. I grew up in a very traditional family where my father was a military officer, retired, working at Sears. My mom was a stay-at-home. I was chaplain of my school when it was an elected position. I was on the principal's committee. I was an honor roll student, and I started high school. And what every girl wants when they get to high school is to have a boyfriend. Well, I got Mr. Popular wanting to date me in the ninth grade. And I fell head over heels. And unfortunately, between the summer of my ninth and 10th grade, I found out I was pregnant. So I went to my parents and we said, we want to be married. We want to have this child. And they said, fine. 2 weeks later, I was walking down the aisle wearing a white dress and expected to go off and live this fairy tale life. Well, wasn't long into that, I realized this was not a traditional relationship. It was a one way and it was abusive. So I kept trying to fix everything because what we do is we try to fix it because we take it on as it's our fault. If we did something better, it would make it better. I lived with that for 2 years and came out of that. I had a big event occur where we were supposed to go on a date night and my parents were going to babysit. He came home from work and had been drinking. I'd spent the entire day getting ready for this big date night because what does a teenager want but to be with her friends? Now, remember, I've quit school. I've been out for 2 years. He comes home late. We get into an argument in the car. He proceeds to park the car in front of my parents' house. He proceeds to physically abuse me and drive off. So at that point, I had to go to the door with a carrier and an eight-month-old baby in my arms and say, and my dad just took one look at me, saw the blood, and went looking for him. Thank God he didn't find him, because I don't know what he would have done to him. But at that point, my mother reached out to the YWCA, because remember, this was 1975. There was nothing called domestic violence then. So she reached out and said, I need somebody who knows what's going on here to talk to my daughter. So I kind of went into a week-long intensive therapy with them. And at the end of the week, this is what they said to me. You can choose to be a victim or you can choose to be a survivor. You have to make that choice. You need to decide and write down some goals on a piece of paper. I wish I had that piece of paper to this day because I wrote down. First thing was, I want to finish high school. I didn't want to do a GED. I wanted a cap and gown. The second thing was, I wanted to own my own home by the time I was 25. The third thing was, I wanted to own my own business by the time I was 30. And the fourth thing was, I wanted to marry a knight in shining armor somewhere in there. So I finished school. I did the 3 years and two to finish. I wore my cap and gown, working a job too. Luckily, I could live at my parents'. I had the help of my parents with a baby. And the second thing, I bought my first home at 22. I married my knight in shining armor. It was 39 years ago last Friday. We celebrated.
Congrats. That's incredible.
And opened the doors of this business at 29. So just going through that, I realized the power of goal setting and of never settling and of creating what you really want out of life. And I think that has carried through with me. It's carried through to our values and our company. And to the point where it's my roadmap, but I didn't speak about it. I didn't tell anybody. Here I was, almost 50 years old. I was sitting on the chamber's board. I was on a couple other boards, advisory boards. And my friend's daughter said, would you come speak to my class? She was a senior at a private school and tell them about your experience. We're studying healthy relationships. And I went, sure. And then I went, have you lost your mind? You can't tell this story. First of all, you don't have a degree. You're on all these boards. What are people going to think of you that you got married at 15 and had a baby at 16? You can't do this. And then I thought, but I've already committed. And I'm one of those that if I commit to something, I'm going to follow through. So I called the hotline for the domestic violence and I said, can you send somebody with me? Because if they ask me a question about statistics or I have no idea. So a woman went with me and little did I know she was the CEO of Safe Alliance, which is the large agency here in Charlotte and surrounding counties for domestic violence. So next thing I know, I'm on their board of directors and I'm raising $10 million to open a new shelter and I am the spokesperson. So I am speaking on the news channels. I am out there doing it. And that's when I realized there's a lot of joy in serving others. I mean, we serve others in our business every day and getting them a job, especially with flexibility now and an hourly. But just being able to give back to people so that they don't have to suffer what you suffered for. And for me, it took somebody naming it for me to really make a plan around what I was going to do to get out. So once somebody named the domestic violence to me and told me what the cycles were and told me how to get out, I could. So I thought, okay, this is what I'm supposed to do. And I've been doing that for a long time now. And about a year ago on my goal sheet, which someday maybe I won't keep doing this, but I wrote down on the goal, I said, I want to do something more national with this platform rather than just the local. And last January, I got an email from a museum in San Francisco called the Courage Museum. and they will be opening in 2025. And they have 15 stories of people that have overcome domestic violence. They've overcome rape. They've overcome human trafficking. They've overcome shootings in their schools, anywhere there was violence related. And this museum will open in 2025, and it will have an educational component that will go around and also a traveling piece of the museum. So another thing is, you know, you put it out to the universe like that and you say, I want to do something. Be careful what you ask for. Because so far it has all come to me. I can't always say it's easy, but I read a book once called Happiness from Sean Akers at Harvard. And his quote was, happiness comes from fulfilling potential. Well, when you're fulfilling your potential, it's not exactly comfortable. Because to fulfill potential, you got to push yourself out there. So I think I could write the book on that. So that's my story of how I kind of got here. And it's a rough road, but you know what? I couldn't be happier in life and where I am in my business.
Well, it's an incredibly inspirational story. And the first time that I heard about it, I was just blown away, and I was already sharing it with others. And I think it is great that you are open about it and sharing it, because it helps bring other people up and move people forward. And incredible what you've done over the years. And with that, I mean, I think that you also said along your journey, you also have like sold a business, you've built a software platform. You just kind of like just like gloss over that. You know, like just part of the path.
Yeah. Well, I always tell people, I said, you know, they always go, "Wow, you know, you had all this success." I said, "Well, I've had six startups, counting now, six startups. I've exited two successfully. I still have one. That means there's three failures in there somewhere." So it's not all rosy and easy. But again, if you got passion for something and you see a need for it and you have the team I have around me, that's where it matters.
It's truly incredible. So you mentioned that normally I was going to ask what's next. You said you are going to be doing the speaking and joining this museum. What's next for My Work Choice? Where are you guys going from here?
Oh, I want to see it go international.
International.
Yeah.
I love
it. We've got a lot of clients now that are international that are already saying, can you come here? Can you come there? And so it's like, okay, we need to expand ourselves and see how it works in other markets. I think Europe will be very open to it because they're very advanced on the gig economy as it is.
They appreciate flexibility as well.
Yes, they do.
Got the time off, that's for sure.
True.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your story. I know one kind of oddball thing that you and I talked about, and you just brought up, I think, the guy from Happiness was a TED Talk that I'd seen. And last time we talked, you brought up the concept of Todd Talks. And I just wanted to touch on that because you were smiling and laughing when you were talking about it. I thought it might be worth sharing with the audience as well.
Right. And you're talking about the Todd Talks on our LinkedIn.
Yeah.
So the president of my company, Todd Warner, is the mastermind behind this. He is driving it every day. He's coming up with the creativity. And he does a Todd Talk. It's coming out about weekly now on LinkedIn.
I haven't actually seen on LinkedIn. I just know last time you were talking about Todd Talks and went off on a tangent there. And I was like, oh, let's bring that back into the conversation.
Yeah, if you go to the My Work Choice LinkedIn page, you'll be able to catch all of his rants. We call it the old man rants.
The old man rants.
It's about everything that's wrong with our industry and why it's broken. And yeah, I think it's going to be that $1 million shade club, dollar shade club thing.
Got it. You've also, and you didn't bring this up, but you've also written and published a book, Creating a World of Difference. Is that something, is this first of many books? Is this the one that you want, you plan to do another?
Yeah, it's time to do another. I've been really thinking, that's been heavy on my heart lately, because that one was published in 2012, and so much has changed since then. So yeah, it's weighing on me to be my next one. And really, I've used it mainly for internal, because we want our staff to really understand who they're working for and what it's all about. And it is a very motivational book. It tells my story, but it's really about our values and what's important in life. And that's really why I wrote it. And I use it for talks too, whenever I go anywhere.
I'm going to pick it up and I am going to read it. And I have not had a chance to before our conversation. And I put it into ChatGPT to ask to give me a summary of it. And it said, based off of your reading, based off of your recommendation, this would be a great book for you. And it has some really good recommendations on influential lead. It had a whole reason, five reasons why I should read it. So I'm excited.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, if you'll send me your address, I'll send you a signed copy. How about that?
I would love that. Well, at this point, we're going to jump over to the kind of the speed questions. We've got three more and then we'll wrap up. So what advice do you wish was given to you when you entered the staffing industry?
I wish I had taken a class on cash flow.
Yeah, me too.
Because I remember thinking on the first big order we got for hundreds of people, you know, and it went for like 3 months. And then I'm sitting there and going, where's the money? It should be pouring in. Where's the money? So I think that was probably, even though I took accounting and everything, it didn't matter. You don't understand cash flow until you live it.
I studied finance in undergrad, and I also wish I had taken a course on cash flow about 5 years ago.
Yes.
it is a lesson that you learn running a business, and something that nobody else, I don't think you get it till you get it.
So. You don't get it until you're there, right? Yeah. Which is most lessons in life.
Yeah. And in the last 5 years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life?
I think truly trying to live in the moment has been the biggest improvement for me. And trying, because I still struggle with this, but it's not going to pay off to worry about tomorrow, because tomorrow may be a debt you never owe. Be worried that you will. And don't worry about the past. I mean, the past is the past. I can tell my story without the emotion that I used to have come with it, because this is the past. So I really think the living in the now has, and I will continue to try to do that daily.
I absolutely love that. And last question I've got for you is, what is one of the best or most worthwhile investments you've ever made?
In my family. That's obvious. I mean, I just found out Saturday that I'm going to be a grandmother of a little girl.
Oh my gosh. That's incredible. Congratulations.
Thank you. That's so exciting. Yeah. So family comes to mind right now.
I love that. Well, Tana, it's so nice having you on. Are there any closing comments, closing thoughts that you'd like to share with the audience?
No, I would just tell them, if they're not using your platform for referrals, they're missing a big piece of this.
That's very kind of you. So.
It has helped us tremendously. We have over 30,000 ambassadors now because of it.
I appreciate that so much. Thank you so much for joining. I love the conversation, and we will talk with you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Staffing Show. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter at staffinghub.com to never miss an episode. Until next time.